Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, our high school roundtable in just a few moments. Illinois may have finished last a year ago in the Big Ten, but don't judge them on last year. Illinois is a very good team this year, which we thought they would be, and last night they knocked off Michigan.
Illini start the second half with the ball, and Michigan looks to come out in a zone here, it appears, as Williams dribbles right side to Sumu, lob to Kofi, slams it in. Hello, Kofi Coburn with a slam. He has eight, and the inbound of the game is over.
All right,
there it is. Upset Illinois over Michigan, 71-62 over the Wolverines.
My good friend Brian Barnhart, and Brian is a good friend, on the Illini Radio Network with the big win for the Illini last night over Michigan. All right, let's get to our high school roundtable. We'll let Sean introduce the participants today. We're sitting over in an enclosed room with a barricade to keep management out.
Yes, always a great idea. We have our outstanding broadcasters, our play-by-play for the Lewisburg Green Dragons, 100.9 The Valley, Greg Wetzel. Hey, Greg.
Hey, Steve. How are you doing?
It's always a pleasure, guys.
Sean?
And also, yep, absolutely. And also, speaking of upper management, we get a double dose of the Chief, who will be spending time, of course, with Kevin tonight, some Thursday night court, the Shikellamy Braves. Dave Ritchie, our Shikellamy football analyst here on WKOK. Dave?
Hey, good afternoon. That's good to be here.
And also the very well-respected and the outstanding sports writer for the Williamsport Sun-Gazette. Doesn't matter if you're reading about baseball, the Williamsport Crosscutters, high school wrestling, football, who he's been covering around the Valley for more than 20 years, Mitch Rupert. Thanks, Mitch, for stopping in.
Hey, that bribe I paid for the good intro really worked out.
I'll swing over and see you quick. I got to get your mic fixed there.
All right. Let's get to the opening question here, and the opening question is, let's start with the Apollo 13 question, where Gene Kranz, played by Ed Harris, looks down at everybody and says, okay, what do we have in the spacecraft that's good? So, guys, we'll start with this. What's good about high school football right now?
Well, I think they've taken big steps to eliminate kids or athletes from getting hurt, especially with concussions. The safety factors have increased a lot. And over the years, you know, it used to be like they put smelling sauce underneath your nose and, you know, if you were okay, they put you back in the game. Now they go through the protocol. And I think right now football is pretty safe. With the new rules about how, you know, tackling and also blocking, that's one thing I think that's good. And I know my daughter has my grandsons, and I'm hoping they play football, but she's on the back stove, burner, doesn't know if she wants to let them play. And I said, you know, the equipment's a lot better, and I said they do a lot of things to keep the kids safe. That's the one thing that I would say has improved a lot.
The other thing, too, Dave, is every team has a trainer now. You know, that didn't happen years ago, that the trainers weren't there. But every team has a trainer at practices, at games, and so that's really helped improve the safety situation also. And we take salt tablets all the time. Yeah. Those don't exist anymore.
No water, just salt.
No water, just salt.
Yeah. That's right.
So,
I think the good part of the game is the kids. The kids are working as hard as ever. I think they're as talented as ever, as big, as strong, as fast as ever. Mm-hmm. The football is still good. I think all that other stuff around is kind of, I don't want to say ancillary because I don't want to push it to the side. And you talk about the concussion worries and everything. That's a real concern right now. But the game is still good. The kids are still good.
And like you said, weight training and stuff that they're doing, speed training, things like that, agility drills, things that when we were in high school, rarely happened or occurred.
Yeah, I don't. I know that when I wasn't doing games on the radio, I used to go down on the sidelines and help our trainer out, and just the atmosphere of being around those mm-hmm. kids. And you're exactly right.
It's right.
They're just as excited to be out there as they were in the past,
yep.
and bigger and stronger. And,
they really are.
And I've seen more speed this year than in a long time. You mm-hmm. know, kids are good athletes.
Yeah, they are. They really are.
Which brings up the next question. Now let's flip it to the other side. If there was one thing or maybe two that you could pick out that you think that would make the game better, what would it be?
Wow. Man, that's... I think the season. The regular season, to me, doesn't mean as much as it used to be because of the state and district playoff system. I think... That's something that PIAA has to look at sometime down the road. The season for certain teams is, 16, 18 weeks long, counting practices and stuff like that. So I think it would be nice to see the regular season mean something, that not as many teams may be qualified for districts. Put some more emphasis on the regular season. That would be something I would like to see.
Do you look at other sports, 500 record is required
exactly
to get into the postseason. Yeah. I mean, here in District 4 this year, we had teams that are 2-8, 3-7 yeah. mm-hmm. getting into the postseason. And that's a necessity because of what you're talking about in how we've gone to six classes and it's kind of watered down the field. There's 11 teams, I think, in District 4, Triple Eight.
Yep.
Eight of them make the playoffs.
Eight.
There's 10 in Double A. Eight of them make the playoffs.
Yep.
So you're bound to have this issue with 2-8, 3-7.
You win two games, you're in.
You are, yeah.
Yeah.
We were talking about Shikellamy. They got the one win mm-hmm. Earlier this year, and all of a sudden they're back into the Quad A playoff
That's
race.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I think that the way the season runs around the playoff system for the PIAA is, I think that that's got to be changed too. Mm-hmm. You know, listen, I played and I coached for Dick Purnell. And I remember he even told us when we played for him that we made our biggest improvement from the first scrimmage to the second scrimmage. Yeah. Now you have to make that improvement from the only scrimmage that you have to your first game. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, sure, they have that week of getting ready, you know, to acclimate themselves to the weather and that. But they're not really practicing the normal drills that you do and getting ready. And I see that with, not having enough players on the field at times for mm-hmm. our special teams, because I don't think the coaches have to do something to get everything in to play on offense and defense, and a lot of times the special teams suffer from that.
That's true. And you don't see that even at scrimmages a lot of times, where they're running special teams plays at scrimmages.
Yeah, and that's I hate to talk about 50 years ago, but I remember on Thursdays when we had our run-throughs that we actually had a first, second, and third punt team, a first, second, and third kickoff team, extra point team. We went right down the line, and Coach Purnell would mix them up, and you'd have to run out on the field, and if you weren't there, you know, you weren't going to be able to be on that team. They would take you off of that, and but they don't have the time anymore, and that's a factor that really hurts.
Yep.
Should coaches return to having a little more, I hate to use the word power, but it seems like their hands are tied by outside elements. What kind of balances are need to be between the outside elements and the person in charge?
Well, first and foremost, I think school boards and parents need to let coaches coach. That's mm-hmm. the job they've taken on. And as a school board especially, let the guy do what you hired him to do. If you don't like the way he's doing it, you get to the end of the season, reevaluate, and then talk about maybe going a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
But in the course of the season, let him coach. Let him be hard on the kids. Let kids understand what coaching is all about, what constructive criticism is all about. And if you're a parent, sit back and let them do that as well. Your kids are only going to be better for being coached, and to have coaches who care and are hard on them. a little bit. Don't try to pull strings for them. Don't try to make things easier on your kids. Let the coaches do what they both volunteered to and are paid to do.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things is to motivate kids. What you're talking about.
Yes.
You know, is motivating kids. And, you know, we have three people sitting here in this studio, and each one of us are motivated in a different way. And, you know, I know as a coach, when I was coaching kids, there were some kids that I could yell at, and it would motivate them. Other kids, I'd have to pat them on the back and say, hey, right, you know, you gotta, here's something you can do to make yourself better, that type of thing. So coaches are walking a fine line, because what's happening is we're living in a world where we want rewards right away, and that's playing time. You know, I'm assuming when we were in school, you were a sophomore, you pretty much didn't play. You might have played some games, but you were holding practice dummies and things like that. Now kids want to play. When they're on the freshman or a sophomore, they want to be on first team. They don't want to sit on the bench and earn their stripes, so to speak. And that's kind of hurt football, because you have to be physically ready to play the game of football, mentally, physically prepared to play that game. And not every kid is ready to do that as a 15-year-old. And I think that's hurt. And parents see that because they've been playing all the way up through midget football, and now they're sitting on the bench. And parents start to complain, but they're not there every practice. They don't see what's going on in practice situations. And they start calling school board members, because the coach isn't playing their kid, and their kid was the fastest kid, you know, in midgets, he was the fastest kid. Well, you're not like that in high school, and it's really hurt. You know, parents need to be more supportive of the situation than what they have been. And I'm not saying all parents are like that. I don't want to take that the wrong way, but man, one parent starts to complain, it gets the ball rolling in a lot of districts.
I know that I remember there were many times that when we would go to being graded on our offense, I was a tackle, and if I got above 35%, I was happy. And I was also, you know, would sit there and have to listen to all the mistakes that I made and the reasons why I made the mistakes. And I would leave the meeting feeling bad. But I even felt worse if they didn't say anything to me during the meeting. And I know I really played horrible. Mm-hmm. So that was something that you mentioned.
Yeah.
You know, you learn what if the coach really cares about you, he's going to tell you what you did wrong, and sometimes you have to do it in a way that is a little bit different than your grandmother would have told you you did it wrong. And it's just one of those things that it's a rite of growing up. And you are correct with the fact that everybody wants to play right away. Mm-hmm. And I'm probably going to get myself in trouble here, but I blame that on these club teams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have club soccer, we've got club basketball, we have traveling basketball, traveling soccer, and the kids get on those teams and their parents pay them money to be on the teams, and they play right away. It's not a matter of earning a spot and, you know, working your way up into the situation. And ultimately what happens, they leave the program. And that's I'm going to go my route now after they leave the program. A big problem with high school football right now is the fact that there are very few junior varsity football games being played. Usually you played on a Monday night. I remember I played on Monday night in JV when I was in 10th grade, and I played on Friday night. I played two football games a week. That's it would have been 19 or 20 games during the year when I was a sophomore when I really needed it.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think Shikellamy only played one JV game, and it was a controlled JV game against Seals Grove. Only one. So here's what happens. You bring your ninth graders up to the varsity, and they, instead of playing ninth grade football, they're now up here and you're not playing varsity, and there's no junior varsity games. So the next year, there's no junior varsity games as a 10th grader. Their very first experience is going to be in a varsity game, maybe as a junior. And you know, I know that I wasn't ready to play varsity football when I was in 10th grade.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hurt. The lower programs not getting enough time out on the field really hurts in the long run. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, we're losing numbers. And, mm-hmm. and not just, it's, hey, football's a tough sport, and it's very demanding, and there's a lot of things to do in this world. But guess what? There was a lot of things to do back when we were in school, too, and you played. But you knew that you were going to get to play some games. Mm-hmm. And practicing without playing any games really is detrimental to the program.
Okay, we're in an era of, especially with bowl games coming up, I think I'll sit out. I want to get myself ready for the pros. Like, and, of course, I just sit there and go, you have to be kidding me. But we're seeing this on the high school level. And I'll give you a prime example. This is a non-Valley situation, but it is close here to State College. Belfine and Bald Eagle areas high schools are separated by 3 miles. Thus, on the last game of the season, it is the rivalry game. Bald Eagle area sat its starters so they could get ready for the district playoffs. When you hear that, what runs through your mind?
You just robbed some kids of another football game.
Yeah,
that's the first thing that comes through my mind, and also I know that we had, when I was in high school, we would have, instead of playing Seals Grove on the second game of the season, we would have played on Thanksgiving weekend, and for some reason, we had gotten into the Eastern Conference Championship at that time, and the coach would set his starters to play Seals Grove because he wanted to get them ready for. To play in the Eastern Conference Finals, I'd have been really mad. I'd have been upset. I think you just cheated your kids out of a great experience. I mean, I was Phillipsburg, New Jersey, and I'm trying to think.
Easton.
Yeah. I mean, there was a bunch of guys that were 10 years after they graduated replayed that game. That's how important it was to them. So therefore, I think that's really. I'm going to use the word asinine, on the coach's part.
Yeah, those are games that you talk about 10, 15, 20 years down the road. Mm-hmm. You know, your rivalry games like that. I think it's terrible that they would set the starters like that. But again, that shows the unimportance of the regular season, that they're caring about districts more than they are the regular season.
Now, I'm going to play a bit of a contrarian here.
Okay.
And it's not because I disagree with what you guys are saying, because I agree mm-hmm. wholeheartedly. But if the coaches go to the players with the idea and say, this is what we're thinking, we think we have a shot to make a run, is your focus on winning this game against Belfont? If it is, go play. Go and go win the football game. If you think it'll help us to make the run, what do you think? If the kids are okay with it, I'm okay with it. They ended up making a run to the state semifinals. Mm-hmm. It worked out in their favor. Was it the right decision, wrong decision? We don't know. I don't know how that affects. Who knows if somebody's going to get hurt in that game. But if it's the kids making the decision and taking a bigger picture view, I'm okay with it. I don't like it for, like you said, the mm-hmm. idea of taking that opportunity, that memory away from the kids. But if the kids are okay with it, it's their decision. I'm good with it.
What should be more important, a conference championship or a district championship?
Whoa, boy.
I think that's different for every team, for every program. I mean, if you look at a team like Warrior Run this year, finally had a winning season. If they had the opportunity to win the conference championship, but understand they're not going to beat Montoursville in the district playoffs, they should put their focus into winning that conference mm-hmm. championship. If your goals are district championship, state playoffs, that needs to be your goal in progressing that far. But there aren't a lot of schools that can make that run to a district title, to the state tournament, deep into the state tournament. Sometimes a conference tournament is what your goal is because that's where you are in the process of building your program.
And I know the Lewisburg coaching staff, every year they start off with conference championship, district championship, state tournament. That's the way they set their goals, and that's what they talk about from January 1st until the first game of the year. This is what we're doing to get ready for the conference championship.
Yeah, the only school in our area that I think, and they did it this year, they forfeited their chance to win the the HAC division, or because Southern did that because they changed some games around, and they had focused on, hey, we're headed to states.
Mm-hmm.
Warrior Run was a really good example because they've really had some rough years.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I know that when Shikellamie, when Todd Tilford came down and we won the HAC 2 years, that was big for Shik because for years things were really bad. But I remember years ago when we had the Susquehanna Valley League, Shikellamie would win it year in and year out, but then they would fail to get into the Southern Division of the Eastern Conference. And I know that was the goal back in the 60s and the 70s. You want to go to the Eastern Conference, which is basically you're talking about going to districts. So,
mm-hmm.
it's one of those situations where I think it's unique to each team.
Should only conference champions make districts?
That's a whole different can of worms to open up. I mean, how many conferences are there in District 4?
I think
you have the Heartland,
tier,
you have the Northern
the
Tier
Heartland.
League. So what are you going to put?
Mid-10? Yeah, have some in there.
Yeah, two or three teams.
Tri-Valley even has some teams in there, in District 4.
Yeah, that's a tough thing to say on the high school level because I think there are fewer conferences on a college level. I don't think that's necessarily a bad idea, but...
I do know that I agree that that 500 percent, the 50% winning beat 500 was a requirement to get into the playoffs. And when I coached girls basketball, that's what it was.
Yep.
And I mean, if you were 11 and 13, you were not going.
That's right.
And even though you were pretty good, and then it got to a point that they were trying to fill out the brackets. You know, mm-hmm. so you had some teams that would end up, being below 500 or even pretty far below 500 would go. And it seems that that's what's happened to make sure there's a full bracket in each one of the divisions.
And Mitch, you would know this better than me probably, but I think this year every team that had a losing record lost in the first round of playoffs.
No, Millersburg didn't.
Oh, that's right. I forgot them in Class A.
Yeah,
I forgot about them in Class A.
Yeah, they were district champs.
Yeah. Well, they're not District 4, though.
No,
I was talking District 4. I think every team lost in District 4.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I know Lewisburg went up and played Warrior Run, and that was I think you said, Dave, Warrior Run was ready. They were excited to be in a district game.
Had never hosted a playoff game.
Never
before.
Hosted.
Had never won a playoff
never.
Game before.
And they took it to Lewisburg that night. It wasn't even a football game, really. They completely dominated the game.
Yeah. Well, this is our half hour number one. One more half hour to go. We'll take a break. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
'Twas the days before Christmas, and all through the town, Sunbury Motors was where all the car deals were found. This holiday season will be filled with glee, because out in the driveway is our shiny new Ford from SMC.
At Sunbury Motors Ford, choose from over 20 new Ford Escape 4x4s with discounts up to 97 $700, and they're priced as low as $23,915. Pick from over 110 new Ford trucks with savings up to $15,500, and they start as low as $26,794. Take up to $20,257 off of a lease of a 2019 Ford Fusion Energy. That's over half off. This amazing vehicle gets 103 mpg. 2019 Ford Expedition XLTs are slashed $11,550, plus get 0% financing for up to 72 months. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
SMC wishes you and your family a safe and joyous holiday season.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Greg Wetzel, Mitch Rupert, and Dave Ritchie with us. High School Roundtable, second half hour. The regular season, because of the postseason, now begins third Saturday of August, around there. A, does it begin too soon, which then leads into B, or the state playoffs and district playoffs too long?
Well, it starts earlier, too, but school's also starting early. I think the only school that starts after Labor Day is Shikellamy, Dave. Is that correct?
Yeah, they've always... They used to start before Labor Day. Yeah. In fact, sometimes we'd have our first football game the weekend before school the game. Started. Now, this year, Shik played two football games before they even started school.
That's right, yeah. And so kids are back. I understand the starting early that way. The kids are back, but... It seems so strange to play a meaningful football game August 20th.
Steve, I think you said this on your show one time about we were into the sixth or seventh game of the season, and we were
still in September.
It's still in September.
Yeah.
It didn't seem natural. No. All right, it just didn't.
I know it starts too early for us because now it's starting the week of the Little League World Series.
Oh, exactly.
You know, so at the Sun Gazette, we're already stretched paper thin as it is trying to cover the World Series. Sure. I mean, this is purely selfish from our standpoint, but now you throw the start of high school football in there as well, and it's a lot to do. I mean, but it's with the way they've gone with the six classes and wanting to play 15 games. If you want to play a 10-game regular season, that's when you got to start. So you sacrifice that second scrimmage that we talked about earlier, kind of missing. You sacrifice that to play a 10-game regular season.
So would it be better to have two scrimmages and only play 9 games? You know, you know, I'm just wondering along those lines. I don't know. I'm not sure about that.
I think it would be.
Quality of play, I think, would be better.
Yeah. Yeah, because the quality of play that first week is usually not very good.
It isn't.
Even with your better teams, it's not that good.
No, it really isn't. And, you know, the regular season was over before Halloween this year. And we just finished the state playoffs this week. So, now, I know that's only for a select group of teams. I mean, there's only, 12 teams that play and went that far. But it's a long season for some of those kids.
Asking high school kids to play 15 games?
Yeah.
You don't ask college kids to play 15 games, you know? That's a lot to put on a still growing, maturing body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only team that I saw that was at state playoff a level the first game of the season was Southern down at Hammond. I mean, I've never seen a team that tackled that well after practicing 1 week. Mm-hmm. It was just unbelievable. And but they're an enigma. They're a freak of nature. All right, they really are.
Yeah. I've talked about this in the realm in part because of basketball, but also I want to apply it to football. We have six divisions or classifications, as Mitch mentioned. Which includes, obviously, a mixture of both public and parochial schools. I've talked about going back to four divisions, but making the other two the charter or public parochial schools. Is that a viable alternative to what we have now to go back to separating public from parochial?
So this is a long discussion that I could take a good time with, Steve. The public versus private thing is something I've invested a lot of time in. I will continue to say, as I have for years now, public versus private is not the problem in Pennsylvania. It is the selective enforcement of the transfer rule. Mm-hmm. If you're not treating every transfer the same, if it's not getting the same hearing that everybody else gets when they go, if the two schools sign off on it, there's no hearing at all.
That's right.
If you're not enforcing the transfer rule the same way, your transfer rule is meaningless. And that's what the problem is. It's not about public versus private. I mean, even now, people want to claim that whatever Southern Columbia is doing that they're not doing, you know. So when you get a public school that does finally have success, the other public schools are eating their own young, you know, and complaining about that. So to answer your question, six classes are way too many. They never should have gone to six to begin with. The problems always were the discrepancy between your smallest Class A school and your biggest Class A school and your smallest 6A school and your biggest 6A school. For instance, Williamsport's enrollment, male enrollment, is about 550 around there. North Penn down in Lansdale, their male enrollment's almost 2,000. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're both playing in the same classification. Bucktail's enrollment, male enrollment, is 33. They're playing the same Class A as a South Williamsport whose enrollment is 135, somewhere around there. So the problems are far deeper than just public versus private and six classes, but six classes is way too many.
Yeah, I agree with the transfer rule has to be enforced with the private schools, too.
Because, yes, absolutely.
You know, I know when Lewisburg made it to the state semifinals, They played a team out of Philadelphia that had kids from Delaware on it and from New Jersey on
West Catholic.
It. West Catholic. Yeah, West Catholic. Yeah.
And you know, the next year, West Catholic didn't exist.
Yeah.
And then they came back again.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like I said, the rules seem to be something's not of norm there. It just
That's
seems
right.
to be strange.
Yeah.
Now, I think
yeah.
the PIAA has taken steps in making sure if there is a transfer that they're not eligible for the postseason, and they've put more and more rules upon the transfers to make sure that they're not giving an unfair advantage to the school that they're going to.
Right.
They're taking the right steps. Have they gone the whole way? No. But I think we're moving in the right direction. I think the PIAA is acknowledging mm-hmm. that there's a problem, and that's the first step to fixing it.
But if you go in as a seventh grader or an eighth grader, doesn't matter.
And to me, that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, as long as you're in there.
And living there.
Have at it. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, like phony addresses or
yep.
living with aunts or uncles, so to speak. Oh. I mean, that's the stuff that bothers me.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Okay. 10 years from now, things will probably look different. Are you confident in what high school football could look like and feel like 10 years from now, or are you concerned?
I have some concerns about mm-hmm. it, mainly is participation. I think that's a problem that is not going to go away. You know, the fact that you know, some parents don't think it's safe, and the other fact that you know, student athletes are you know, seem we don't have as much interest. All right, especially at some of the schools around here,
mm-hmm.
And the fact that you know, kids don't. If I use the word stick it out, you know, they get to a point where if they're not playing or not seeing anything out of it, they leave. And if that continues to happen, then you're not going to have enough players. I, you know, one of the things in the late 1970s, Shikellamy had enough football players that the entire 10th grade team could practice themselves, have 35 kids that practice, and everybody wondered why the junior varsity teams were so good. Well, guess how many reps those kids got? Yeah. Every one of them. And we'd go to play other teams that didn't have that many. And in the 80s, that ended. It got to a point that the 10th graders, everybody had to practice together with the varsity like everybody else. And it made a big difference. And the less kids you have, I think you don't get as much done at practice. That's yeah. one thing that I'm concerned about is participation.
And tying in with the participation, so to speak, we're guilty of this as radio announcers, too, and TV announcers. I'm watching a football game, and you see somebody get tackled, and they describe it as a vicious hit or a collision, you know. And that scares people when you're used to, I don't want to say scares people, but the terminology that we use to describe something that might make a mother or a father
actually,
even cringe, so to speak.
Well, here's the term. Here's the word I used.
Mm-hmm.
I use over and over. Tagged.
Yeah.
He got tagged.
Yeah.
And, okay.
Which sounds
and
a lot
I've
better.
I've always used that, and I've used it deliberately because mm-hmm. it indicates it was a hard hit, but it doesn't indicate there was anything beyond being a hard hit.
That's right. And you know, you mentioned injuries about being safe. Concussions happen in football, but concussions happen in other sports. Football has taken measures to try to reduce concussions with the helmet, with the chin strap, with the mouthpiece, and things like that. But we don't hear anything about soccer, where there are a lot of concussions occur in soccer, but they're not putting a helmet on their head or anything like that. They're still letting them play soccer.
Because here's the reason why. I think whomever has put together the campaign against football has done a brilliant job of being very organized and focused mm-hmm. about it, and football has had to react to it.
Right, yeah. Well, that's probably 100% correct. But again, it's perception, and they think soccer is a much safer sport. We've had kids that didn't play soccer this year because of ACL injuries. You don't hear about right. that, you know. Football, a kid gets an ACL injury. Oh, that's a terrible injury for a kid in high school football. It happens in every sport they play, basketball, football, wrestling, everything.
There's an inherent risk in every sport
exactly.
you play.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think we've progressed positively in that we're more cognizant of the damage head injuries, brain injuries can cause, and I think we're quicker to recognize what is and what isn't a concussion. I mean, back in your guy, we come from little different generations. You talk about getting your bell rung. That was a concussion. You had a bruise on your brain when you got your bell rung. Now we understand those better, and I think we're taking better safety precautions as to how to treat those head injuries and how to prevent them. I think we're moving in a positive direction. But that doesn't, you know, it's not going to quell parents' fears about it. I mean, I think we're going to see players start playing football later. You know, there aren't going to be as many kids starting at 8 years old. Maybe you wait till you're 12 or 13 and or until your body is developed a little more. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing to be looking at big picture, future down the line, how your quality of life is going to be. But maybe in the short term, the quality of the football might change.
You know, I didn't play junior high football. My first football game was a varsity game as a sophomore, and I just know that I've started every drill and I ended every drill, and it took 10 years before my coach said I was told to do that. All right, so you get you ready, but I think you're right. I don't think you have to start when you're when you're a peewee to play. Or I've seen these specials on these. Flag football leagues.
They are becoming more and more popular. Yeah. I think they're great.
Yep. Well, I did play flag football in elementary school. I did that. Yeah. But, you know, but you're right. It might be something to look at along those lines.
Yeah. Mitch, since you're sitting there, I do have to ask this question. How concerned is Williamsport right now with the minor league baseball proposal?
I think it really depends on who you ask, Steve. I think if you talk to the people within the Crosscutters organization, I think they're pretty confident that the team is going to remain there, because if Major League Baseball wants to continue to play a Major League Baseball regular season game at Bowman Field, they're going to want a team in Bowman Field so the field and the stadium is maintained over the course of the years. And I don't see how Rob Manfred can say, we're eliminating these teams because we want better conditions, better field conditions, and locker room conditions for all our players. And, they're willing to eliminate the Crosscutters, who play at a stadium where they play a Major League Baseball game. So it's kind of talking out of both sides of his mouth. I think baseball is going to be fine in Williamsport, but I think it's a scary time for other teams, especially in the New York Penn League.
Which team should be worried?
Batavia. They've had problems here.
Auburn.
Auburn is another one. Places that need legitimate and massive facility upgrades, places like that. But you look at, and Steve, you've been around, you know, a lot of these places are going to, like State College, they're teaming up with college teams. West Virginia has teamed up with West Virginia University, and they share a field, and you're getting better playing conditions now. But there are still those teams, Batavia and Auburn especially, that are probably in trouble.
So far, Major League Baseball has not backed off on what they want to do with this as the negotiations continue. That's my understanding as to what happened in San Diego. Does this in any way, shape, or form make sense from a public, because they're getting crushed in the public relations area. Minor League Baseball has crushed them in public relations.
They're not just maintaining their stance, they're doubling down on it day by day. And that's what's sickening. And I wrote a column a few weeks ago, and the lead of it was, does Rob Manfred even like baseball? Because the decisions he's making, I don't think, is for the betterment of the game. You're going to take teams away from the Northwest League, which has teams in Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana, where that's the only way people in those states can see professional baseball without traveling 10 hours to Seattle. So he's taking away baseball from communities that otherwise don't have opportunities to see professional baseball. And it's a terrible PR nightmare. He knows it's a terrible PR nightmare. And he's deciding, you know what, I'm going to die on this hill because I need to save the owners that I work for dollars and cents.
Well, to me, it's baffling. And it's baffling because you're trying to get 18 to 34-year-olds excited about going to baseball. So you're taking the least expensive option off the table in small towns, and your stated claim in analytics is that you don't want players over the age of 33. Well, exactly where do they come from? The minor leagues.
And if you think about how they want to reduce the number of teams because, in part, most of these players aren't going to make it to the major leagues. Most of the players on a double A roster aren't going to make it to the major leagues, let alone right. Class A short season teams. But you're eliminating guys like Jose Altuve, who was a, I think, 3 or 4 years he spent in short season ball.
Yes,
before,
he did.
Before he started to blossom and really become the prospect that he was. And even by the time he got to double A and triple A, people weren't sure that he could play in the big leagues because he's 5'5". You're right. Taking away guys like that. You're taking away the story of Brock Stassi, who was a 33rd round pick of the Philadelphia Phillies. And he played 3 months with the Phillies. But he's got a story to tell that people in Philadelphia are going to remember because he was a 33rd round pick and made the big leagues.
Right. Mike Piazza.
Absolutely.
40th round pick.
Yep.
40th round pick.
Yep.
Hey, final thoughts on the high school level? Any final thoughts from anybody we haven't touched on?
I think we're in a good place with high school football. I think our priorities in general are in the right place, that we're concerned about the safety of the student-athletes involved, and we understand that they're student-athletes, and this is an extracurricular activity. But this is also an avenue towards a college education. Now, there are times we go too far with that, and the college scholarship is the be-all, end-all. But I think the people who are involved with high school football especially are involved for the right reasons. I think the people who stick their nose in, like school board members, especially those in Bloomsburg, who I've railed on before, they need to back away. They need to let the people do their jobs, let the coaches that they've hired do their jobs, let them coach the kids, and we're going to be just fine.
The other thing is, too, Mitch, taking off what you are saying on a Friday night, it's still the best draw in any town.
Absolutely.
You don't get 2,000, 2,500, 3,000 people to any other event. And every Friday night, you see those stands full with people. Well, I won't say full anymore, but there's 2,500 to 3,000 people to every football game in the area.
I got to the Southern Columbia Montoursville game at 4:30. Mm-hmm. For a 7 o'clock game, I could not find a parking spot at the stadium.
Yep.
Hey, can you imagine Friday night without high school football?
I mean, I can't.
Yeah. And I think you're right that it's good there.
Yep.
And I think as long as we have the rivalries and some of the coaches that have come back to coach in the area have helped, and they're trying to get the programs turned around. And I just wish that, like you said, maybe there's too many classes. All right, mm-hmm. I really would be in favor of that doggone second scrimmage. I really would. I'm sorry, but I just know from coaching and also from participating in the sport that it means a lot. Mm-hmm. It really does, and it's been taken away.
Yep.
Dave, you got another basketball game coming up tonight. Good luck with that
with you
and Kevin.
Thank you. Thank you very
much. Appreciate that. Yeah. Always do a great job. That's on WKOK tonight. Mitch, thanks so much for your time. Greatly appreciate it.
Anytime, Steve. Thanks for having me.
And Greg, it's tremendous having you back on with us as well.
Hey, thank you. It's nice being here. Thanks a lot.
What a great hour that was with three outstanding guests that have outstanding points of view. I think we covered a lot of ground in the hour. We're looking forward to that. Tomorrow, our bowl picks. 1 hour of bowl picks. About 22 minutes of one individual analyzing the Celebration Bowl. Last year, the ratings for the Celebration Bowl were good, except here in the Valley. A lot of people said they were turned off by the analysis. Sean, I don't understand where that came from, but
the streak of five ends tomorrow.
It is
your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.